Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
How's it going, guys? Welcome to another episode of The Hangout, El Hangueo with Jonathan Mejia. I'm super excited that you guys are here with us today. Today we have someone who cooks it up in the kitchen, has a secret sauce that's not so secret because she is doing amazing things with her sauces. We're talking about Silvia Cáceres, as she is known, the Enchilada Queen. Silvia, bienvenida. Welcome. How are you?
Oh, muy bien. Gracias. Encantada de estar aquí.
No, thank you for being here. Silvia, yes. I wanted to share more about your story because I think it's super inspiring. Obviously, you built a name for yourself. You built a brand for yourself. But let's talk about Silvia, who grew up in Brownsville, La Frontera. Talk to us about what it was like living in Brownsville in a border town.
Wonderful. It was a small town at the time. It was 50,000 people. I think it's like quadruple now. Brownsville's kind of a hot spot with SpaceX being there nearby. But back then, it was just a small town and just a family, or very family-oriented little community. And mother, father, my father worked for the USDA. He was a cattle inspector. My mother worked in a grocery store. And it was just a happy time. A little bitty three-bedroom house. You know, I was reading something, one bathroom. I mean, we got along fine. One television. Cute little yard. My father loved to work on the yard. And it was a happy time.
So when did your interest in getting into culinary and kitchen space start?
Well, it started, well, I always had an interest in food. As a kid, I started cooking when I was 11 for my family. And then I went off to get my degree. I decided I needed to be a teacher. And so I majored in home economics. And then, but it was a Bachelor of Science, so I got offered a fabulous job in Houston with a major food company, Uncle Ben's Rice, and they hired me to work in their research labs. So I did that for 10 years. I started as a research home economist, and then I went into the product development labs, and I became a food scientist there. I did that for 10 years, and then I just felt like I needed to make a career change. So I left the food industry, or manufacturing, and went into food service sales. So I started calling on restaurants and represented various major food companies around Texas and eventually three states. I got tired of the travel. I just decided that it wasn't for me anymore. So I did something that I do not recommend people to do, but I did it because I had this burning desire. I just knew I could do it. And we took our life savings and some of my 401k and bought a little restaurant that was kind of new. So that was my third career, all in food, albeit. But as a restaurateur, I was able to take everything I learned in the labs, certainly growing up in South Texas, cooking with my mom, my grandmother, working in the research labs, working on new products. And then what I learned about restaurants as a vendor. And I knew just enough, I guess. And I knew a lot about food, a little bit about restaurant management, because it's very complicated, and was able to somehow pull it off. So that was my third career. And so I was 42 years old. And at the time, I thought it was so old. Ha! that's 30 years ago. So yeah, I thought, wow, I almost thought, well, I don't know, I may be too old to do this, but I did it anyway. And started off in a little teeny weeny hole in the wall. And little by little built it up, figured out that my customers loved enchiladas. So I renamed it. Started off with another generic name. So I named it Silvia's Enchilada Kitchen, so to market what I was really good at. My customers were telling me, that my enchiladas were wonderful. And I was just doing what I thought was right. You know, I wanted to represent the food and the culture for what it is and special. And so that's my story.
Silvia, I want to dig deeper, right? You talk about making a tough decision, right? You're talking about your entire life savings to open up a business that is super tough. You know, the restaurant industry is really tough. They say, you know, I think it's like you only last 3 years and then it like,
Yeah, they fall right and left.
Did you have faith that you were going to, you know, see it through, or were you worried at all?
There were times, you know, the economy does affect restaurants, and certainly in the beginning, because I was unknown and I was in a B center, you know, the real expensive rent is an A center, and I was in a B minus center, maybe even a C. So the front door of the restaurant faced a side street, even though the address was Westheimer. I was like way on the west side of Houston, but the cars driving, really, if they saw me, I mean, I was in between all these other little businesses, so I had no recognition. But I was afraid, but for the most part, I just had a gut feeling that I could make it. I had unlimited energy and optimism and faith, and that's what kept me going, even though sometimes I did get discouraged.
And the second part that is really important, you talk about the age. You were 42 years old when you made that decision.
I was 42 years old, yeah.
Talk to us about, you know, not being limiting by the age. You know, it's never too late to start over.
No, absolutely not. And I did something related. I mean, it's like I didn't know what I didn't know. It's the restaurant business to some people seems kind of easy and fun. And there definitely is a fun thing. I love to make people happy with food. And I started doing that when I was 11, feeding my family, feeding my friends in high school and college. I cooked for everybody in college. I always loved to cook. So that part's fun, but there is a very difficult part, and that's all the business end of it. So I was not so great at that, but somehow I managed to. And the other lesson in all of this is that I always, for 20 years, which is what the number of years I pretty much worked, is I always lived on less than I made. So I always had money set aside. I tried to be thrifty and have a savings account in case of an emergency. So now as I think about it, I go, wow, you know, I could have lost it all, but I just, in my gut, I knew I could do it and that I was willing to work as hard as necessary. Wow. to get it. And the other, you know, I had an epiphany, and this is so strange. It never occurred to me until about 3 or 4 years ago, maybe a little longer. During the pandemic, I was being interviewed by a reporter on the phone, and she asked me a question, and I realized that I had done this as a woman by myself, that I had children, but they were always in school, in college, and they would help me a little bit like on the weekends, but I pretty much did it without a partner. And that in itself, now that I think about it, I go, wow. And it was hard because usually most chef-driven restaurants, there's usually a partner. There's usually a spouse, a kid. It's usually a family endeavor. And I did it kind of by myself, just with employees, which was oftentimes difficult. Yeah.
Difficult. But what did you learn about yourself throughout those times?
Just don't give up and be optimistic and jump up every morning and believe you're going to have a great day. And if it's not so good, then you just say, okay, well, tomorrow will be better. And you just have to always focus on quality, giving the best, you know, having that pride, because I think that's one of the things that separates me. The thing about most restaurants, a lot of restaurants are, they're people in the restaurant business, and they're not food people, they're business people in the restaurant business. Mine is different because I am a food person in the restaurant business. So there's a distinct difference in the way I approach food. I approach it with quality, authenticity. You know, I prepare my food like I would. My recipes are developed like it would be from my home. And it's not like the cheapest or the fastest or whatever.
Gotcha. You know? And Silvia, when you talk about, you know, just your years of life, but also your years in the food industry, Houston is known for a very rich, diverse culture and really good food scene. That's what it's known now. And I'm pretty sure back then it was like that as well. Did you, did you have that in the back of your mind that you'd be able to stand out in such a rich and diverse city?
I always knew that I had a different, that my food was different, even though I was in a category. I'm categorized as Tex-Mex because I do a portion of my menu is very Texas oriented. You know, we do chili con queso, for example. We do fajitas are very Tex-Mex.
Yeah.
but there's also a part of my menu that's very Mexican, very, very Mexican. And so, and that's from having grown up on the border. I kind of learned both styles of cooking and the subtle differences between the two. And so, I just, quality has always been very important to me. And it starts with pride. You know, it starts with pride, the way my restaurant looks, the way I dress, the way my food comes out, just everything. I always want to make sure people feel good when they pay the bill.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like it was a value.
Yeah, and that's really important. And I feel like
absolutely
you can see it in your work, but also you can see it from who you are as a personality and how you carry yourself. Throughout the years, you had many people come and go into your business. Is there anyone in particular that you saw in your restaurant that you probably never thought they'd have some of your food?
I mean, I have had some celebrities. This was shocking. I had Rachel Ray come, but I wasn't there. I'm sure if I'd have been there, I would have recognized her, but she wrote about it in her magazine. And this was in 2008. Had Tyler Florence came. I wasn't there either. But somebody saw him and, you know, put it on social media. I was there and I left on break and he came, he was here doing a book signing. I forget there's a couple of other, Jacqueline Smith. I don't know if you know her. She was a Charlie's Angel. She used to eat there all the time.
Oh, wow.
When she was in Houston, she loved it. In fact, one time, I think it was the Chronicle did a story and she mentioned that she loved my restaurant. And so, and I'm trying to think, I mean, I've had politicians from both sides of the aisle eat there. But, you know, it's just a lot of regular customers that love it. You know, it's interesting during the pandemic, the one restaurant, the one that's been there 16 years, because I moved from my original location to where I am now. Mm-hmm. And we had customers tipping huge tips. And of course, we would share them with the whole staff, kitchen and the floor. But I mean, we had a $5,000 tip one time on a very small, on a $100-something order. We had several thousand, $1,500 tips. And people wanted us to make it.
Wow.
Yeah, it was so cool. But, you know, we serve, I mean, some of those kids that were 5 or 6 are now like out of college or getting married. So, I mean, it's like it's been going on a while.
Yeah, yeah. One of the celebrities that I actually saw on your Instagram page was 50 Cent. Were you in when he was there?
No, I wasn't there.
Wow, it seems like you're not there.
I know that. Yeah, I know that. One time there was one, and I can't think of his name, but he's got a unique nose and he's blonde. I can't think of his name right now. But anyway, he was there and I wouldn't let anybody go bother him. I said, let him eat. Mm-hmm. Celebrities don't want to be bothered.
Yeah.
They want to eat and they do not want to be bothered. So leave them alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's the problem with these big celebrities. They can't have a private moment.
Right.
Because people come. I mean, that's the flip side of being famous, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So let's get back to you, though. You know, a lot of people, when they're in the kitchen, they keep a lot of stuff secret. But you have been very open. You have your cookbook. You have new sauces. Talk to us about, you know, being a published author and publishing cookbooks.
Well, I did my cookbook. I was on Bobby Flay in 2015, and I didn't win. I didn't get to compete against him, but I did take my food from the restaurant in a freezer bag and called on some publishers and sold it to a publishing, to St. Martin's Press, which is a division of Macmillan. And so that was cool because most publishers won't buy a cookbook unless you're nationally known, like if you're on the Food Network or something. So that was cool because they bought it. And then, I've been able to use what I've done on my career. I've been able to use it. And, you know, crossover to, it was a lot of fun. It was a blast to do that. And then from there, and of course, I started a cooking school in 2005. I started with teaching tamales, and I still do it. I do it about twice a month. Wow. On Saturdays. And I do a lot of private classes, team building and all that. And then my latest venture is my sauces.
Talk to us about your secret sauces.
Well, and I just figured, you know, I just want to share the knowledge. And if somebody wants to go home and do the work, they are a lot of work.
Yep.
I mean, because they start, my thing is, if you don't start with raw ingredients, your flavors are never going to be as good as they, you know, as if you do a recipe with fresh, raw ingredients, that's always going to be the best way to do it. And if you want to cut corners, which is what, unfortunately, a lot of restaurants do, because they're all about efficiency and cost. So if you want to do the work, it's okay. You know, do it. And I have people, you know, Lonesome Texans or whatever, that have the book and have told me they, you know, this is the only good food they have is when they prepare it, because they live in other parts of the country.
Wow.
And you can't get this particular style of South Texas Mexican food, which is where I'm from.
Yeah. So, and with the sauces now, they're in stores. Where can people find
them? Well, I have them right now. I have them at Central Market, and, you know, they're a gourmet grocery store. We have them at Bearings. We have them. They sell online through our website. We sell them in our stores, and we're reaching out to other major retailers like H-E-B. But Central Market is part of H-E-B, so my hopes is that as we continue to succeed at H-E-B, I mean at Central Market, then the next step. And I don't believe in fast growth either, because if you try to grow too fast, that's anybody or any business or anything, you'll trip and fall. So this first year, which is, you know, this is our first year, you know, we're still learning.
Yeah.
Just like when I started the restaurant business, I'm still learning as I'm going along. I mean, it, you know, because it's a whole different world. The food manufacturing and retail world is totally different from the restaurant world.
Sylvia, how would you say that your expertise, right? You were a food scientist, and then, I mean, now you're diversifying your assets, right?
Right.
How has each step of your life and each step of this industry career that you've built helped you to get to where you are today?
I just learn and I catalog it away, and I try. If I make a mistake, I always figure out. I sit back and I go, okay, that didn't work out. What did I learn from it? And then what could I have done different? And then I guess I file it away, and I try to use that, you know. And I make mistakes. Of course I do. Sometimes I make quick decisions, you know, snap decisions. Usually I think stuff through, but I do make decisions, and I go, oh my gosh, what was I thinking? But yeah, so I try to learn from the successes and the failures, and, you know, and just, you know, one of the things, you know, in the success of my restaurant, I always, you know, I go back to being thrifty and being careful with my money, not wasteful. I always paid myself last. Even when I started, I always had some reserve money and if I didn't make that much at the restaurant, I knew I had a little extra over here. So if there was a downtime economically, I could always stay afloat. I would never, you know, be in a pinch where I couldn't pay my bills. So I still continue to do that, and that's to conserve my cash, pay my bills, pay all my bills, pay my employees. I'm very, very disciplined. I handle the money in my restaurant like it's almost like it's somebody else's. It belongs to the corporation. It's not like I can go over there and start writing myself checks and lose control. Mm-mm. No, I treat it very businesslike. And I think that was one of my strengths when I started, that I had a lot of integrity with my bank account.
Which is good. And just hearing you talk and learning more about you, talk to us about, you know, not just withholding what you have, but also just sharing your knowledge, sharing your resources.
I'm glad to help anybody out. I'm very glad to help anybody out. I worked for 20 years for big companies, and I know it can be great. It can be a lot of fun. The paycheck is fabulous. The benefits, the insurance, da 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 da. But I also saw a lot of people get laid off, lose their jobs through no fault of their own. And I call the paycheck an optical illusion. You think it's job security, but you really don't ever know.
Yeah.
So that was something I watched happen. And I didn't want to be there. I was in my early 40s when I made my decision to leave. And I remember thinking, in 10 years, I'm going to be in my early 50s. And what am I going to do as a woman in her 50s if I let go from my job? Sales is a young person's game, almost in any field. And I didn't want to be put out to pasture. So I thought, I need to control my destiny. And so that's why I said, I don't care how hard I have to work.
That's awesome.
I'm going to make it one way or another.
You're going to make it. You're going to
continue
making it.
Yeah, I'm going to make it one way or another. And it's the same thing with these guys right here. You know, my next step, of course, is HEB. Central Market, there's one here, but there are 10 in Texas. So the sales are going pretty good. Okay. Not fantastic, but they're moving. And so we're excited about that. We got a report this week. And so I'm going to continue with my demos and social media and this is my, I guess, in a way, it's my fourth career.
Yeah.
Food manufacturer.
Yeah. And let's talk about the food that you have here that you brought to us. We'll go from our right to the left.
Okay. the quail, and we do, like I said, several different meats that we grill. We do fish, and we do quail. We do, of course, beef, carne asada, beef fajita, chicken. We grill that corn over there that you see on the far right. Those are all like big favorites. Then of course we do something very unique. I started doing it about probably a little over 20 years ago. And that's, we do what we call a flight of enchiladas. And these are south of the border. So on the far right is the, enchilada verde. So it's tomatillo sauce, which is this one right here.
Yeah.
And it's got chicken and sour cream, a little bit of white cheese on top. The second one, we call it Morelia. So that's Mexico City on the far right. The second one is called Morelia. And it's salsa roja with queso fresco. And then we garnish it with romaine and a little bit of radish.
Wow, qué rico.
It's a beautiful one. And then the third one with the avocado, that is carnitas. Ooh. And it's a creamy green sauce. So it's this salsa with a little bit of crema mexicana.
Sí.
And then the last one is one of the most classic also in Mexico, and it's mole. Mole poblano.
Sí.
And it's queso chicken. And then we garnish it with a little bit of queso fresco. And that's it. And then and that's south.
Right.
So then the north, we do the chili gravy, which is this. So it's a cheese enchilada with chili gravy. We do a ground beef one. In Mexico, you will never find a beef enchilada. Or you would probably never. I've asked a lot of people and they say, no, it's not something that's done. So we do. But in Texas, we love beef enchiladas with this beef-based sauce. And so then we do a crab enchilada with a crab sauce. And so any enchilada that isn't typical in Mexico and I created it, I claimed it as mine.
Yeah.
As Texan, because I'm a Texan.
Yep.
And I live on this side. And so, yeah. So then the fourth one is, we call it the lubbock. And the lubbock is it's more like a chile con carne. So it's a very meat, it's this, but with a bunch of meat in it. It's very meaty.
Yeah.
And that's how they like their enchiladas in North Texas, because that's very much cattle country.
So you're under Tex-Mex. Has it been difficult for you to try to cater to, you know, make sure your food is not too Tex-Mex, too American or too Mexican or too Hispanic?
It hasn't been difficult. I mean, I try to balance it out. But one thing I do try is that when I do something, I want it to be the real thing. I've had people say, well, why don't you do this one? And why don't you do that one? Well, I'm not sure how to do it, and I'm not going to do it and fake it. I have to make very sure that what I do is quality, and I don't want somebody to come and say, well, I'm from there, and that doesn't taste like it should. You know, so I'm very careful in my development of recipes, because I am, I guess, kind of a perfectionist in my recipe development, very flavor sensitive. I mean, when I was trying to develop I upgraded my fajitas. When I first started, it was just, my fajitas were like everybody else's in Houston. And one day I had somebody say, you know, your enchiladas are amazing. Your fajitas are okay. And I knew, because I wasn't putting any effort. So I started to figure out how I could make fabulous fajitas. So I upgraded the quality of the meat. I specified a specific slaughterhouse. I only bought fresh, not frozen. And then the marinade, I didn't want my fajitas to have what I call an off flavor. I needed for them to taste like a steak, and I wanted them to be fork tender, and that's what I ended up with. And then, of course, the leña.
Yeah.
So sometimes, and that took me 2 years to figure that out. Well, that wasn't the only thing I did. Like, I was running a restaurant.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, yeah. So I'm very perfectionistic about my recipes. Again, the pride.
Yep.
The pride. I mean, I want people to be happy.
Sylvia, taking a look back at your life and your career, what would you tell 11-year-old Sylvia about the woman and businesswoman and, you know, entrepreneur that you've become today?
Oh, my goodness. What would I tell her? Whew, that's a great question. I guess just reach for the stars and just don't be afraid. You know, I had an epiphany. I'll tell you about this epiphany I had. And I was still working for Uncle Ben's, and it was right at toward the, this is the last 6 months that I worked there. And I made this, I had to fly across country, and I didn't want to travel. I had an infant at home that I had to leave. He was only 4 or 5 months old. And I was not, I was going to go observe a, they were doing consumer test, and I had to go and be an observer and make notes and all that. And I was very unhappy. I was tired of that career, and I just didn't want to be there. So anyway, so I'm talking to a stranger on the plane, and he figured that I wasn't happy. He could tell I wasn't thrilled about the job, or certainly not about the travel. So as we deplaned, he said something to me that, like, kind of like it was an epiphany. He said, "I hope you find the courage to make the changes you need to make."
Wow.
And it in that instant I realized that the only reason I hadn't left Uncle Ben's yet was because I was afraid. So I decided to find a way to control the fear and make a bold move and leave a place, because I was already, it had been 10 years. I'd never worked anywhere but there. I'd gone to college and I'd worked in a lab. So my world was real little. And when you've only worked one place, I mean, you don't, you know, your world is small.
Right.
So that was, for me, a big epiphany that I had to work on my fear.
Well, Sylvia, thank you so much for coming on to the show, the podcast, and bringing us a little bit of what you do. If you're watching or listening on your favorite podcast platform, thank you so much for tuning in. I want you to go away with something. It's never too late to change, and just go for it. If you have a feeling, an instinct, and believe in yourself, believe in your product, you'll make it through.
And don't forget about my sauces, please. This is the one that's the most unique. There's nothing like it on the market. It's our chili gravy. It is amazing. This is salsa verde, and this is the salsa we give you on the table when That's you come awesome. To our restaurant. So thank you so much.
Well, thank Jonathan. You, Silvia. Cuídate.
Gracias.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Wayfair's big sale is returning. Get ready for Way Day. For 4 days only, score up to 80% off all things home with free shipping on everything. From October 26th through 29th, score Wayfair's best deals, like up to 80% off area rugs, up to 60% off mattresses, up to 60% off bedroom furniture, and more exclusive doorbuster deals. So mark your calendar and shop Way Day starting October 26th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.